Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, hi, and welcome. I am your host, Emma Gunnar-Wardner, and in my nearly 20-year career as a beauty and health writer, I have interviewed a lot of people. Supermodels, entrepreneurs, authors, celebrities, and doctors. And many of these conversations had a real impact on me, and I'd come away feeling inspired, excited, informed, and really empowered. And at the back of my mind, I'd always think, I wish I could just publish the tape so people could really feel that conversation. Well, on this podcast, you get to feel the conversation. I talk with experts, guests, and a few friends who I hope will inspire, inform, and empower you, and maybe also challenge you, whether you're looking for self-help, self-improvement, beauty advice, health insights, business know-how, or just some good old-fashioned life advice and a bit of a laugh. It's all here. Welcome to the show. Hello. Hi. Welcome. I hope you're very well. First and foremost, I hope you are very, very well. Welcome to this episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunnar-Wardner. And these are interesting times. If you are listening to this episode in real time, meaning the day it's published, then we are in the midst of the coronavirus crisis. And it is my pledge to you that during this time, I will continue to bring you content, continue to bring you conversations and episodes that I think will be helpful. There will be entertainment, there will be infotainment, but there will also be episodes with people who I think might be able to help navigate this tricky time. And to that end, the brilliant Dr. Shelby Harris, who came on the show last summer, agreed to come back on the podcast to really talk about how to maintain a good quality of sleep when all of your routine has been pulled from out underneath you. If that's the right expression, it's probably not. It's probably a bit clumsy. But we connected on DM, on Instagram, and then we chatted on email, and we recorded this conversation over the internet. Shelby is in New York. I am in London. And we just wanted to really help you navigate what is a very stressful time. And stress can trigger sleep issues, it can trigger anxiety, and it can also trigger depression. It can cause relapses in those things, and it can cause them to start for the first time. And what I hope we do in this episode is give you the tools, strategies, and tips for A, giving yourself a bit of a break because it's to be expected, but B, also put together a very easy strategy to help you navigate tough times. And if your sleep is being affected, then all the better. Isn't that wonderful? The link to Shelby, if you remember, she came on the podcast last summer to talk about her book, The Women's Guide to Overcoming Insomnia. But in this episode, we talk about what disrupted sleep might mean in a time of crisis. We talk about managing your own sleep, but also managing the sleep of people around you. If you are isolating with children, for example, you might be having to navigate a whole new sleep schedule, which may have its what should we call it, period of turbulence. But all of Shelby's insights and expertise are in this particular episode, and I really hope that you find it useful. A little bit of housekeeping. I am obviously recording the podcast via the internet at the moment because I am self-isolating. I think the audio came up pretty well. There are a couple of janky bits, but please bear with. I've done as much as I can in post-production to make this as enjoyable for you as I can make it. And I really hope that you find the content helpful, useful, and hopefully quite comforting too. If you want to get in touch with the show, I'll just remind you that I always love hearing from you. It's my favourite part of doing this podcast. So please do email me on thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. You can slide into my DMs on Instagram and Twitter, where I'm at Emma Guns, or you can follow the link in the show notes. The show notes can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. And you can join the Facebook group. Click the link. There are thousands of us in there talking about what's currently happening as well as other things. It's a really nice, friendly community, and I urge you to join it if you feel like you want a little bit of a virtual hangout with some like-minded people. It's a great, great place. Also in the show notes, you'll be able to find the links to Shelby's social media, Shelby's book, and also she talks in the podcast about a set of questions you can ask yourself if you are in a state of worry, panic, or anxiety. And so obviously I will make those as available to you as I possibly can. But here she is, all the way from New York, making a wonderful return to the show, very generously offered to come on and speak to you about this. So I'm very, very, very grateful that she gave me her time. Here it is, Dr. Shelby Harris on The Emma Gunn Show. Dr. Shelby Harris, what a lovely, well, how lovely to see you again.
It's lovely to see you too. I wish that things were a little different in the world, but it's great to see you across the pond, as we say.
It is. Last time we saw each other, it was last summer. Mm-hmm. And we had a great conversation about your book, The Woman's Guide to Overcoming Insomnia.
Thank you.
I have in my hand.
You're so kind. Thank you.
But we are doing, because I refer to it a lot, actually. And we're doing this via video because we can't be together because we are in the midst of the coronavirus crisis.
Yes.
You're in upstate New York.
Not even. I'm like a half hour outside of New York City.
Oh, right. So,
yeah. I mean, well, people in Manhattan might say it's upstate, but yeah.
I know. Did I come across as a complete townie then?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I live right where everything is breaking out right now in the city, and the hospitals are overrun. It's scary. It's scary, yeah.
And you're self-isolating. I'm in London. I'm self-isolating. And we were chatting on DM on Instagram, and now is a perfect time to actually really, really tap into your expertise, because essentially one of the first things that goes in any kind of stress or crisis is sleep. Yep. And I am thinking about my listeners a lot at the moment because we're all going through something completely new and unique and scary. And this is the perfect episode, I think, is if we can kind of, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, if we can somehow get our sleep okay in the new environment that we're finding ourselves in and the new circumstances, we might be able to mitigate some of the stresses and anxieties that we're obviously feeling at the moment, given the world as it is.
Yes, 100%. I think there's also, though, a bit of giving yourself some grace and understanding from an evolutionary perspective that our bodies are meant to react to stress this way in the short term. So some people are almost freaking out. At least some patients of mine that have been doing well for so long are contacting me because they're not sleeping well. And this is also new. Right. And our bodies see it as a threat, whether it's a threat we can't physically see or visually see, it's a threat. It could be a lion in a cave. We respond the same way. We are trying to fight it. And in the short term, our bodies are hypervigilant, trying to figure out how to deal with this stress. So if you're not sleeping at the beginning, there are some things we can try to do to mitigate it, but there is a bit of normalcy in the not sleeping at the beginning. So to give yourself some grace to say this is normal almost reduces the pressure on yourself in a weird way. When it starts, and there are things that we can talk about doing to try and reduce some of the problems that it might create. But then in the longer term, a few weeks in, when this is becoming sadly the new normal and we don't know how long it's going to go on for, that's when we really start to dive in and say, okay, now this is becoming more of a chronic insomnia. I can't diagnose someone with insomnia when it's been only just a few weeks going on.
Yeah. But if somebody is listening to this and they aren't sleeping, their mind is incredibly busy with worries, which is, it's normal. Don't give yourself a hard time.
Don't give yourself a hard time. There are things that we can do, but if that's not working, if it's a week or two or three in, we will get there. And then we will start to dive in. There are some gentle things we can do, and then we can start doing some more intensive limiting time in bed, some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But to do that in the first week when your body is all over the place and second week, it's not necessarily worth it. But there are things we can do to try and be preventative. Yes.
And one thing I do want to come on to is also if you are in a position of managing other people's sleep, children, but I do come from the school of put your oxygen mask on first.
Yeah.
So we'll come on to that. And I just wanted to really talk about this period of turbo anxiety or like hyper anxiety and how it might be affecting us. So we're saying actually it's a perfectly natural physical animal response to the situation that's going on to have disrupted sleep and to potentially feel anxious. And disrupted sleep is often one of the first signs of anxiety and depression. I think you say that in your book.
I do.
The change in sleep pattern. So what's the first thing that somebody can put into place to just maybe not experience too much disruption?
I think the first thing that everyone needs to be doing, and people, some people are embracing it, some people are giving me some backlash with it, is just keep a schedule. Mm-hmm. Even if you can't keep a schedule all day long, like people are homeschooling or trying to figure out a work schedule all day, like that's overwhelming. Keep your regular or something close to a normal wake time for you. Mm-hmm. So I, for example, this might sound, you know, extreme, but I wake up about 5:15, 5:30 most days in the morning to work out before my kids are up. I've now switched to about 6:15, but that's not drastically later. And I'm doing that every single day, even on the weekends. Mm-hmm. Keeping that set, it's weird, but a set wake time helps to set the rest of the day for you. So a set wake time will help you to almost start building up that appetite, that hunger for sleep come bedtime. If you start sleeping in an hour, two, three, and it's just very varied, you're trying to catch sleep where you can in the morning, or you just don't feel like getting out of bed, you're not going to be hungry enough for sleep come the bedtime that you want to have. So a set wake time with an alarm clock 7 days a week and get your behind out of bed. That's the first thing.
Because I spoke to quite a few friends last week who were saying they were so scared and frightened and they were so out of their normal that they were, one friend actually told me she stayed in bed for 3 days. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, for the love of God, just get out of bed.
Right. Right. And I think right now, at least here in New York, most of the people, my friends, people I've been working with, this has been about a week-ish that most things are now closed and people are working from home and their kids are being homeschooled. So they're not really seeing the effects of it so much. Mm-hmm. But we as a nation or as humans naturally are, we have these body clocks essentially that naturally drift later and later over time. And we have these set points of, we call them Zeitgebers. So they're time cues, and getting up at the same time when we have a routine in our life, whatever that routine might be, that's what helps keep our body clock in check to make all the rest of the clock of our body kind of fall in place. And if you lose that, many other things are going to fall with it. So if there's one thing that you can try and do, it's just get your behind out of bed. And if you don't feel like even starting your day, you're feeling down, you're feeling depressed, just get your butt out of bed and sit on the couch. Mm-hmm. That's all. Start there.
Make the bed, sit on the couch.
Yeah, exactly. Make the bed, make it less enticing to get back in. And if you're struggling with even that, get an alarm clock, right? Right now is not the time, if you can, to keep your phone in your room. I know I always make a case out of that, but people right now are checking their phones left and right all day long. And that is just making the sleep even worse at night. So get an alarm clock, get the phone out of your room, put the alarm clock across from your bed so it'll make you have to get up in the morning as well to actually turn it off. Mm. So, and then you make the bed and go sit somewhere else. It's not about starting the day if you don't feel up to it. Just get out of the bed.
Is there a case to be made for an optimum wake time that you could set for yourself? So would it be sunrise, for example?
You know, there are some people who argue that you have, there's this ideal bedtime, wake time. I think it really does vary upon you as a person. With all these extreme measures that we're taking in the world to try and self-isolate and the social distancing, the hope is that this is not forever, right? That this is going to be a time-limited thing. So if you are normally getting up at 6 a.m. to go to work and do all the things you need to do, and now you're starting to sleep until 10 a.m., you're going to be in for a really rough adjustment going back. So try to pick something that is closer to what your ideal will be when you go back to work, hopefully, so that it's not going to be so bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Sunrise, it doesn't really matter. Sunrise, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I am a huge fan of light exposure, though. So one other thing, like we were talking about before we got on officially, is that like it was so beautiful here in New York and sunny and warm on Friday, and it's snowing and dark out now. So... It's like, what are you going to do? And I know where you are, it's nice and sunny and warm. If it's dark where you're living, if it's dreary and we're not getting outside right now either to get light exposure. So the minute you get up in the morning, open up, even if it's not super bright, open up all the shades in your room. Mm-hmm. Light exposure is going to be the other key because that helps to set our body clock. So get up, open up the windows, just soak in the light throughout the day. Get as much as light as you can up until about an hour before whatever time you're going to choose to bed, go to bed, and then go to bed. It's routine. The rest of the structure that we put in the day is important too, but you really need to set it around a bedtime wake time.
Yeah, because I've been saying to followers on Instagram, you know, I break my day up into hour segments.
Exactly.
I've been working from home a lot. I have been very unproductive over the years. And this is the only way for me to feel like I can sort of get momentum and be productive. But that's a big change. So I'm sort of thinking, right, if we're going to make it easy for listeners, it's just maybe the first thing that you do before you go all in on my particular strategy is just to do that wake time.
Yes.
Wake and conversely, time. Does that mean we do the sleep time? We are as rigid about sleep time when we go to bed?
That's the ideal, right? We still want to think about it as, okay, if you're someone who, there are a lot of people who sleep, lucky for them, is not so disrupted. If it's not, then you just count back the amount of sleep that you typically need, right? And this is also the time where some people are sleeping okay, and they're normally so sleep deprived because they're working so many long hours that they can actually get more. I mean, it's those some very lucky people who are not having a disrupted sleep at night, but get that extra sleep if you can. 8 hours, 8.5 hours, count it back. But the wake time is really the key. Mm-hmm. And then if you really find that you're struggling with going to bed at the beginning of the night, like that's where I think a lot of people, or they're waking up in the middle of the night, try and see like, okay, maybe if I'm up for an hour, hour and a half, just worrying or whatever it is in the middle of the night, go to bed a little later. It's a weird way to think about it, but that's what we talked about the last time we spoke, is that sleep restriction. So it's limiting the time in bed a little bit so that you're really sufficiently sleepy by the time you go to sleep. And sometimes it deepens your sleep a little bit more. Yeah, it's like, yeah, go ahead.
No, you finish.
Because sometimes I find if you're worried and your mind is active, but you're really, really sleepy and you stay up an hour later, it almost overpowers a busy mind.
Okay.
So
push your limits a little bit to actually
improve
your sleep.
Within reason. Like I would never, if someone's sleeping on average, let's say 6 hours a night, broken up, you don't spend 9 hours in bed, right? Mm-hmm. People are trying to catch it when they can. That's really part of the problem. So instead of a 9 hour window, maybe consider a 7 hour window. Stay up a little later and you might find that you fall asleep a little bit faster. And if you set the wake time, count back 7 hours, it might do you some good.
Okay. And then that just made me think about something as you talked about sleep quality. So I'm sure we can all relate to that feeling of wear yourself out in the day and you'll sleep better. And being as active right now is a little bit of a challenge if you are self-isolating. And I mean, there's nothing like a bit of fresh air to make you feel really energized, but then equally tired at the end of the day. So could our quality of sleep be deteriorating because of the fact that we're being a little less active potentially?
For sure. That's, you know, that's what I was kind of saying earlier, is that I think we're, at least here in New York, we're in week one, week two of this. I think another week or two of this the sedentary lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I'm really big on try. I mean, it's not, ideal. People aren't making the best food choices. I know myself, I'm craving those high fat, high sugar foods to get you through in the moment. Mm-hmm. Do whatever you can for self-care to try and move. I offered to all of my patients, I said, you know what, if you can't get out of the house, like it's snowing and it's just not great, I will walk on my treadmill with someone else if they have a treadmill or a bike while we talk and have a session. Do that while you're talking to someone. Just, there are so many great YouTube videos out there. Just move. Mm-hmm. Get up, do 5 sit-ups, just stretch. That will help you greatly. If you don't use your, I always think of sleep at night like a battery that's recharging. Mm-hmm. If you're not using it during the day, it won't need to charge as much at night. It's that simple.
Ah, okay. I like that. Restful sleep is also really significant for maintaining one's mental health.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder, I'm curious, I'm saying you must be getting lots of messages from your patients, but I'm putting words into your mouth there. But are you finding that obviously the condition, the situation itself is very stressful, but also the sleep disruption, it has the potential to make people feel like they're relapsing. That's something I've been getting a lot of messages about. Have you been experiencing that kind of thing too?
Yeah, because like you were saying before, like the first thing that often goes when we start to see anxiety and depression come back, like actual diagnosable anxiety and depression, sleep is usually the first symptom to go. But it doesn't always mean that, right? So it can be a signal that something needs to be taken care of, and also that everyone is going through this right now. And that sleep is going to be disrupted, and we'll do what we can. If you try to mitigate the sleep problems by doing some of those basic things we just talked about, it might help to push off a little bit of the anxiety and depression. And then there are really good anxiety and depression management methods as well, you know, mindfulness, meditation. It's not always going to be a total cure, but just getting through every day that you can to try and sleep better is going to be helpful in pushing off that anxiety and depression day by day.
And if you have been experiencing broken sleep and you are worried about a relapse, it might not be that it's a relapse. It just might be a normal reaction, but just put your strategies in place just to keep your mental health in check.
Exactly. So take it out of what's going on in the world right now. When I have a patient that's doing better and they've been doing better for a little while and we're talking about, okay, I think it's time to stop treatment. You know everything you need to do. I always say to them, you know, it doesn't mean that you're cured. There's no such thing as like being a perfect sleeper every single day from here on in. I don't sleep well every day. That's the reality. It's about knowing, okay, if I have one bad week, let me maybe take out a diary. And there are great sleep diaries. There's ones in my book. There's ones online you can get. Just start tracking your sleep. Mm-hmm. I would start with that. And then after 1 week, if you look at it, it's still not getting better. And it's like, you're like, oh, I'm drinking a lot of caffeine to try and get through the day or whatever. Make some small changes. And if after 2 weeks, it's not getting better, then you can start saying, okay, my sleep is becoming a bigger problem. Every day I'm having really big issues. I'm up for hours. Maybe I need to be more aggressive with dealing with it. But 2 weeks of poor sleep is not a chronic insomnia make.
Okay. And that brings us quite neatly into some of the things you can perhaps bring into your life in order to help. And I really wondered if you wouldn't mind explaining adaptogens a little bit. Am I right in thinking that might be a first point of treatment for someone expressing that they're feeling disrupted sleep at the moment, potentially a bit of anxiety? Would that be the first thing you'd say to them to try?
You could. I would definitely consider it at this point if you need to. I'm not opposed to it at all. Yeah. Instead, we're doing what we can to get through the moment.
Yeah. For sure. Why are adaptogens? Because they're herbs that treat mood disorders and stress. And a lot of my listeners will be thinking, Emma's talking about herbs.
I know.
Which is not my normal thing. But you talk about 3 in the book, actually.
I mean, I deal with it mostly from a sleep perspective. So, I mean, you could do it for stress and anxiety, but I would definitely, I'm not someone who ever prescribes them myself, but if you find that basic relaxation, talking to a therapist, like right now, it's a lot about what I'm doing with patients is like perceiving yourself or visualizing yourself coping. with the worst case scenario, a lot of that sort of, like, I do a lot of cognitive therapy. So it's, you know, relaxation, self-care sort of stuff, but then also the cognitive therapy with anxiety and depression. But if that alone is not enough, then I would definitely have a talk with your physician or an integrative medicine doc or whoever you could about any of the various adaptogens that are available from a sleep perspective, right? We'll talk about it a lot for like menopause. We'll talk about it for if people are still not sleeping, we'll talk about black cohosh or evening primrose, like any of that stuff, or even for the anxiety and stress. But talk to them first, because you also want to make sure that it doesn't have any interactions with the medications that you're taking. It's totally good. Then you can move towards pharmaceutical grade medications. It's a slippery slope right now because people are drinking more at home. They're using more drugs. They're using everything. And you just have to, it's, I'm not against it, but you have to be very careful when you start going down that road.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about visualization and cognitive therapy. One of the reasons I kind of skirted it was because I thought, well, can people do that when they're isolated?
So visual, like what in particular, like the cognitive therapy part or?
Yeah. I mean, how would you apply that? Would you have a session with you like we're doing now, where with a video session, or could somebody... That you can.
Yeah. I'm doing video sessions with people all the time right now, my usual caseload. And then in the States, which is really good, they got rid of the restrictions across state lines right now. So we're doing all telehealth stuff. So I'm seeing a lot of, I've had a lot of people on my caseload over the years, just because I worked at a hospital for a long time, who are nurses, who are physicians, and it's, we're terrified to go and do some of the stuff they're doing. So a lot of it is, what is the worst case scenario? What do you predict will happen? What's the most realistic? Picture yourself coping with the worst case scenario. And you can do a lot of this stuff with someone over video recording. Teaching someone meditation, you can totally do it all over video. You lose a little bit of that in-person feel, but it's better than nothing. And I find it's still, I'm still getting that connection with people. And it's working quite well. And we're doing a lot of, I'm using a lot of tech with people now. So even more so than before. Meditation, I'm doing a lot of that. And I'm using the apps more than ever. I'm recording things on my computer, sending them to patients. I'm sending, emailing resources left and right. You can, I mean, it's very, very applicable over the computer.
This is making me think about the thing you talk about in the book also, worry time.
Yes.
Actually, like, lean into it and
lean into it.
Think, visualize yourself coping with the worst case scenario. Think about the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Yes.
But then park it and forget it until tomorrow. Is that a strategy that you find is really helpful? And what are the mechanics of making it work?
So for sure. It's funny you mentioned that. I saw like an Instagram post by John Cleese like yesterday or a few days ago where he said, and I was like, he's essentially suggesting worry time. He said, it's too exhausting to worry all day long. So just worry at 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. or something. It was hilarious. So basically worry time is when we're, the idea of it again, is that when you're worried, we worry all day long, a lot of people. And right now, right, we have that heightened arousal where we're thinking nonstop about the threat in front of us. And if you can, it's hard to do, but especially right now, but if you can allow yourself one time a day where you give yourself 20 minutes and you say, I'm going to worry the heck about anything and everything. And you don't even have to do that visualizing yourself coping part. There's two ways you can do it. One is you just put out a piece of paper and you worry the heck out of anything and everything in your brain and you just empty it out. It's exhausting. Set a timer. And when the 20 minutes is done, you're done. And then at points later on in the day or night, if you start worrying about the same thing, it's usually always the same thing right now. You just say to yourself, no, not now, but during worry time. So you're not saying don't worry about it, because every time you say don't think about it, don't think about it, it's like me saying to you, Emma, there's a pink elephant in the corner. Don't think about it. He's got a tutu on. Don't think about it. So what do you have? You have a perfect image in your head, right?
Yeah.
That's what happens. The more you say don't, the more you want to in your brain. So with worry time, you're allowing yourself to think about it, but you're saying, just not right now. I will in a few hours. So set a specific time. I do it at times when I'm really stressed, I do it myself. And I do it like once a day. I tend to like to do it in the later afternoon. I don't recommend doing it right before bed. Later afternoon. And then when you worry, if you find yourself going down the rabbit hole, not now during worry time, not now during worry time. The other way you could do it is, but I find a lot of it's hard.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right now is to write on one side all the worries that you have, and on the other side of a column, write what's the next step solution. And that's what I have in my book, is one way to do it. But a lot of the things going on in the world right now, there's no solution for. It's just I have to wait, take it day by day. So you might just write the same thing over and over again. And that's a bit of acceptance that you have to practice.
Yeah.
But the more that you do that, the more your brain will start to learn to worry, but not worry generally all day long. There you go. That's the whole point of it. So it just tempers it down a tiny bit. And then you also have to think about the triggers that you're doing that might be causing more of that worry, right? So like I was saying, we all have our phones. Are people watching the news nonstop right now? Right? Are you getting alerts on your phone? When this all started happening, I was a news junkie, self-admitted. And I would check the papers all the time. I've now limited it to once a day. And I just watch the once a day ones. It's a news conference by the governor of New York, who is very down to earth, rational, tells us what we need to do, where things are going, very fact-based. And that's what I watch once a day. That's it. I won't watch anything else because it's not helping me. It makes me worry more.
Yeah, it really does. You have to choose your media very wisely at this time.
Yeah. And if I find there are lots of feeds on social media that are triggering to me, making me more anxious, that are people getting into arguments, I just turn it off right now. Close it. I will unfriend or whatever, because I don't find that it is helping me in the moment. And that's what you have to really make those decisions for yourself.
I agree with you completely. I know we've talked about sleep time and a little bit about, wake time and a little bit about going at the same time. But in the book, we also talk about, or you, not me, I didn't write the book. We talk about predictable rhythms. And even something like one of the adaptogens you mentioned is chamomile tea, and how you travel with it and it's really useful. But actually also setting your chamomile tea drink for a specific time can be really helpful too.
Yes. So that was something I thought to mention earlier. So if you're thinking about just setting a schedule for yourself, start with bedtime, wake time, right? The wake time first. And then if that's okay for a day or two, then maybe start to think about the other things. So chamomile is a great one, right? Tea. Pick one day or one time that you want to pull that in. If there are any medications or anything else that you take that you normally have to take at a routine time with a meal or a meal timing, chamomile or whatever it is that you need to do, set that in with timing. Our bodies crave routine for eating. They usually go to the bathroom at around the same time every day. We have bowel movements about the same time. All that sort of stuff, if you can set that in with eating, drinking, medication, sleep, then start to build in maybe some of the other stuff. It will actually get broken down much easier from there. Because think about it, you wake up 8 a.m., then you're going to have lunch at noon. If you break up your breakfast to lunch and then you maybe have to take a medication, then you have smaller chunks of time to actually have to do things. It will make it a lot easier. But yeah, definitely break in those things too with chamomile, any teas that you're taking, herbs, whatever, exercise, anything.
I think we talked about this last time, but I think it's worth covering again. I think when we spoke, I told you about I had been doing intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. And I had noticed that one of the benefits had been that my sleep had improved. And also that plays really nicely into the idea of creating a routine. Like, is there an optimum way of planning, scheduling when you eat? Obviously, a lot of people are snacking because we're around the food. But is there an optimum way of setting out when you eat in order to maximize your sleep then later on?
I think it really does depend upon the person. I'm not a big fan of saying, don't eat this, don't eat that. I'm a fan of just because I think everyone has their own sort of sleep schedule that works for them. But I do recommend, if you can, try to limit meals, any food, within 3 to 4 hours of bedtime. Sometimes there are those people, the intermittent fasting thing is interesting. I think it works for a lot of people, but there are some people who do wake up in the middle of the night because they're having low blood sugar issues, or they wake up literally because they're hungry and they don't actually appreciate that they're hungry. So that's something you do need to consider. But for the majority of people, try to limit it about 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. So if you're an 11 p.m. person, that 7 p.m. cutoff of dinner or any meals actually works quite well. The morning doesn't really matter. You know, there are some people that need food. I personally, and I think I can't do intermittent fasting very well because if I don't eat breakfast, I get migraines. So it really, it's this, it's, and a lot of people do. So you have to really think about it for yourself, but we don't recommend eating anything large or any big meals within 3 to 4 hours of bedtime anyways. So I think it works out then, but there's no gold standard time that you should stop eating. Just kind of set it based on your bedtime. So that's the 7 p.m. I think is because most people go to around 11 and that's where it fits in.
You said something there that's really interesting. You mentioned everyone has a sleep pattern that works for them. So actually, perhaps one of the best pieces of advice you can give is don't mess with it too much right now. Even if it is a bit disrupted, don't start creating something really rigid and very different because that could make it work.
Yeah. Like there, I think we have patterns that work for us that we've, and also routines that have worked for us. So if you are normally someone that is getting up at 6 or 7 every day and it's been okay, maybe you can push an hour, but don't go crazy because it's just going to start to possibly disrupt and you might start noticing you have more pockets of time awake in the middle of the night or trouble falling asleep. And it's just going to create more problems in the long run. So try to keep it as close as you can or as you can to what you normally do. And it will be helpful in the long run when this is all over.
Okay. We might have lost like about 30 seconds of audio there.
Yeah. It looks like you froze for a second.
Would you mind just repeating that?
I think people generally are creatures of habit. Our bodies are very set if you're a good sleeper to begin with. So try to keep it to what you normally do within an hour. Try not to really change it to something drastically different. When I see a lot of patients that are struggling, to be honest, it's because they've retired and stopped working. And then they just automatically say, you know what, now I can sleep until 9 a.m. It's not a problem anymore when they were used to sleeping until 6 a.m. their whole lives. So this, I have a friend who said to me yesterday, she thinks the people who will adjust the easiest to this are the people who have been retired for a while because they know what this is like. To have a routine and have to put it in. And I think this is like a forced retirement for some people and it's going to be a struggle. So don't shift things around too much.
Can we talk about napping? Are there any hard and fast rules for napping?
Okay. So if you're a good sleeper, napping is fine. 20-ish minutes before 2 p.m. Power naps are awesome. Now, if you're someone who's struggling with sleep, now remember, a week or two in, it's okay. But if you notice you're starting to have worse sleep, just try to avoid the naps. You're going to want to, but the naps are going to start to worsen your sleep more and more. So try to avoid it. You want to get that hunger for sleep at night. That's the key. Okay. So no naps.
Okay. What about creating a sleep space, like making your bedroom a bit more of a sanctuary than it maybe has been already? Are there any good tips you can give people just to make that space more welcoming and more conducive to sleep?
Right now, for a lot of people, if you're in a space that is crammed with people, or you're in a one bedroom or even a studio, try to at least, I think you can make it welcoming as much as you can with just ordering new sheets, make it soft, dark, comforting, like comfortable texture. But the key is clutter. I think clutter is going to be the biggest thing right now, honestly, for people. Yeah. So if people are working in their beds, I think a lot. I know I've even self-disclosure, I've had to do it a few times myself because there's no other place in my house to do it. So try to build a spot in your room if you can to keep all work outside your bed. Make your bed that haven for sleep. And if you can do that, make the bed every day, that routine you were talking about, make it pretty, get some new sheets. There's nothing that you can do that's going to like make it amazing, but whatever for you that you really crave to make it comforting is going to be key. Just watch the clutter. That's going to be the key.
Clutter. Now let's get on to managing the sleep of people around you. A lot of my listeners will be now in a situation where they are homeschooling their children and their children are going to be home 24/7. That's a huge change for parents and children alike. What is a good starting point for making sure that children aren't disrupted sleep-wise?
Right. I mean, I'm going through the same thing. So yeah. It's, if you, like, I think you had mentioned earlier, like putting your oxygen mask on first. So I'm keeping my schedule as close to as I normally do routinely. So I'm getting up a little bit before my kids do. I'm trying to get in as much as I can. It's not easy. I've made a commitment to myself to even get 20 minutes of walking on my treadmill if I have to, something. Before my kids get up, and then I'm waking them up. If they're not up, we're getting up within a half hour the same time every day. People are going to not like that, but it's going to help us in the long run. But you have to do that. Keep them on a routine. And I'm struggling just like most other people to keep that same schedule throughout the whole day. That's hard. But if you keep them on the same bedtime, wake time within a little leeway, but really set that wake time, it will help you in the long run. And really try to avoid the sleeping in on the weekends by an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, especially for the younger kids.
Okay. And what if someone is listening to this and they have children at home, maybe it's teenagers, or they have a dependent living at home who is now all of a sudden struggling to sleep because their routine of going to school or going to wherever it is has now ended, and maybe they've got energy reserves that they didn't realize they had. They're not sleeping great. Like, how would you suggest helping those people?
So for the people who just have energy and can't sleep, sometimes just you can't get into a fight with them. If it's someone who, if you have like a slightly older kid or a young teen who just wants to go to bed later, there is something to be said about teenagers naturally going to bed later and waking up later. And I'm trying to fight schools to actually start a bit later, at least in the States. So this is where it actually might work to your benefit. So if they have more independent learning, more things that they can do for themselves for school, maybe finding a happy medium between where you want them to go to bed and where they're naturally going to bed might be pretty late, might be helpful. So if it's normally you're saying 9 p.m. and they don't want to go to bed until midnight, maybe pick like 10:30 as a happy medium. And it might take some of the struggle away, especially for those teenage kids, because they naturally want to go to bed later. You do have to be kind of put your fist down a bit, limit the electronics. You're going to have to be, it's not going to be fun when you're all in the same space together. You're going to have to stop all the phones, put a phone charging spot out in your kitchen so that everyone's phones are outside their room, model the same behavior so that they're not going to be up and talking to their friends in the middle of the night until all hours. And then the teenagers might want to sleep in a little later, but they're not going to be so sleep deprived because they're getting up crazy early for school. So you can find that happy medium with time. It doesn't have to be so strict of like 7 a.m. for school.
So it's just little things that you can just implement to make sure that the disruption doesn't hit you physically, basically.
Exactly. But I think like with the teenagers, and I think actually with the younger kids now, it's going to happen too. Take all the tech out of the rooms. It's going to make it easier too. And put it just somewhere in like a family charging spot, because you don't want to give them more temptation. And all their friends are going to be doing the same thing. They're not going to be getting up for school in the morning. Their parents are all in the same boat. So we're going to start seeing kids talking at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. And then they're really not going to want to get up in the morning.
I wonder also if you can talk about, there's a really nice section in your book about changing your thoughts. And I think at a time like this, I know that you are a sleep expert, but I think also reframing the situation and trying to see it through a positive lens in whichever way you can is really helpful. And I wondered if you could give listeners some guidance on just how to maybe reframe or flip from feeling panic and stress that might be impacting on your sleep,
right,
so that you can sort of navigate this a bit more calmly and hopefully your sleep will improve.
Right. So that's the cognitive therapy we were talking about earlier. So the idea of cognitive therapy is that when you have a negative emotion, I mean, it can even be a positive emotion, but no one ever thinks about that part, but it's a negative emotion that comes up. there's usually a thought that goes through your head right beforehand. We're usually very fit, at least myself and a lot of my friends and patients, we're all very physical, right? We feel panicked, we feel anxious, but there's usually something that goes through your head right beforehand. So it's first and foremost, it's figuring out what is the thought that's going through your head beforehand. Is it, this is never going to end. I'm not going to make it through this. What are those kind of, it's often right now a lot of catastrophic thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. Try to write that thought down. And then there's a bunch of questions. I have them in my book. You can get them online that you can ask yourself, right? So what's the worst thing that I predict is going to happen? What's the best outcome that could happen from this thought? Sometimes there's no best outcome. What's the most realistic outcome? The most realistic outcome to a lot of those catastrophic ones is this is going to suck for a while, but it will come to an end. Mm-hmm. I will get through this. We will get through this. We have endured in the past, and it will pass. What would you tell a friend? That's one of my favorite ones, because what would you tell a friend, honestly, is the key in this, having the same thought, not just lying to them. What would you tell a friend, honestly? If you would tell a friend something totally different than you're telling yourself in this moment, why are you holding yourself to a different rule book than you would hold anyone else? Right? If you can have some of those thoughts, or even another one of like, what is the effect of believing on this in the moment? Is it doing anything for me other than just making me spiral out of control? What could be changing my thought in the moment? What could the effect of that do? It could actually calm me down, center me a little bit. Is there any other way to view this thought, right? So there are a bunch of thoughts that questions that you can ask yourself. Like I said, you can get them online, get them in my book, cognitive therapy questions. And I find for myself, for my patients, I have them all memorized, write them down, print them out, put a picture of them on your phone and look at them. Mm. You know, my husband likes to sometimes, I still get anxious about that. Everyone's getting anxious about this stuff. My husband will always say to me, what would you tell a friend in this situation? And sometimes that just snaps me right out of it. So if you find that question that works for you, that will help. And it's not always, the interesting thing, it's not about positive thinking. Because if there are legit hard things going on that there is no positive answer for, to just say it's all going to be fine is not like, it's not the solution. Sometimes mm-hmm. you have to be realistic about it. So to say, you know what, it's going to be hard, but we will get through this. We're taking measures to make sure that we get through this and this ends. That's sometimes just enough. Instead of the kind of spiraling catastrophic thinking, it just tempers it a bit.
Hmm. That's really, really good advice. And I'm actually going to just tell you now, listeners, that I will be putting the link to those questions in the show notes. So if you're listening to this and you want those, then that's where you'll be able to find them. The other thing I did want to ask you about is supplementation. I do believe in a bigger look at the picture, which we've talked about, you know, implementing a good structure, having a routine, all of those things, the cognitive behavioral therapy. But I am drinking my sleepy nighttime tea 2 hours before I go to bed. I have up my magnesium. And then there's also lemon balm, which I've never taken or tried. But is that your favorite?
I've done lemon balm in the past. I do like it. I find once in a while it does help me. I think it's worth trying if you're someone who's really struggling. Remember, I also tend to see some of the patients that are the worst, where nothing tends to work for them. But I think lemon balm, I've definitely seen people that lemon balm, acupuncture, which is a hard one right now, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But magnesium is another big one I'm seeing a lot of people really find very useful. It's just so calming. Mm-hmm. So I like that one a lot. And then chamomile. The tea is a great one too, but you have to be careful because if you're someone who's prone to urinating at night, just make sure that you're not going to urinate more with drinking all the tea. So a cup of it max, but it is calming.
Yes. And then also the one I'd never heard of, and I liked it the way you talked about it, because you're like, it's great if you're tired but wired. Mm-hmm. And that's L-theanine. Where would I find that?
You probably find it online. Here you can find it usually in specialty markets. And the person who had written that chapter with me, Dr. Takeyasu, is an integrative medicine doc. So she has all these great websites and resources, and you can get them pretty well easily online, at least here. Mm-hmm. I don't know about over there. though. You could try.
What's the what does L-theanine do exactly?
That you would have to talk more to with her about, because I do not prescribe it or use it really much at all. That's when I recommend it to other people, but I have had patients that use it mostly and find it can be helpful. But those are all like the second line things. Mm-hmm. But magnesium is much easier to find. Chamomile is very easy to find. Melatonin is another one. I don't know. We talked a little bit about melatonin. It's just different here versus over there. Like a lot of the stuff is over the counter here, but not regulated by the FDA and agencies. So it's all very amorphous and strange. But some people love it. Some people don't like it. It's, you know, right now try what works for you, but just know that just because it's over the counter doesn't mean it doesn't have side effects. So use it with caution, try the behavioral stuff. And if those combinations aren't working, that's when you talk to your physician about medications after a few weeks of stuff going on.
Yeah. I always think, and you said it perfectly then, it's the second wave. Like if you are struggling with your sleep, taking magnesium and doing nothing else is probably not the best way. You've got to do some heavy lifting, and that heavy lifting is changing up your routine, perhaps to favor a healthier sleep pattern or whatever that might be. And then magnesium and those things can maybe be like the bow on the top of the heavy lifting.
Exactly. You know, and the thing that's interesting is we're, at least in my society here in the States, we're quick to, it's changing, and it'll be interesting to see how much more it changes, but to give medication. So people say, I wake up at 3 o'clock and I can't go back to sleep and my mind is wired and I just, and all we have to, you know, no one asked the question before they're given things like Ambien, all these, you know, strong medications, but no one asked them like, well, what time do you go to bed at night? And if we find out that they're going to bed at 9 p.m., 8 p.m., they're actually getting a good solid number of hours of sleep. So that's where a behavioral approach of working with someone to shift their schedule later is actually more indicated than starting to use all these heavy drugs that you're going to have a bigger problem with down the road. So the behavioral interventions are really the things that we need to often do first, then combine them with medications if it's indicated. And all the supplements are wonderful. If the behavioral stuff isn't working first.
Yeah. Okay. That's been so unbelievably helpful, Shelby. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much.
I know you fit me in before your day properly.
I'm about to start homeschooling in about 20 minutes. So
you get through it. The fact that one of the things we talked about when you came on the show, when we saw each other in London, was about, we talked, I think maybe even off tape, about you running. And I love the fact that I can see in your office all of your running vests, your numbers from your races.
That's so kind. My husband, to make me feel a little better, he organized a lot of my medals because we have so much time. They were all just in a pile on the floor, and it was like the sweetest thing.
That's a lot of medals.
I've run a lot of marathons and halves, but it is what it, you know, it's, you got to surround yourself with things that keep you motivated. And when I, you know, races of mine, as many people around this world, got canceled. There are far worse things going on in this world. And to get motivated, to get my butt on the treadmill in the morning, sometimes I have to look at where I've been to get my butt just moving. So it helps.
Well, thank you so much. As I mentioned already, everything that we've talked about, the links will be in the show notes, and obviously the link to you, your book. I will also put the link to your social media, because you've been putting some really helpful stuff out there in the world right now on your social platforms. So listeners, you will have no problem finding Dr. Shelby Harris, who I am so glad to have welcomed back on the show.
Thank you for having me, and be well, everyone. If you have any questions, by all means, you can find me on Instagram and just contact me or email me. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Emma. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening. I do hope that you found that conversation between Shelby and I helpful. I hope that it could be useful for you in the coming weeks, whether you're listening to this at the time it's published or at another time when hopefully things are a little less stressful. If you want to get in touch with me, please do email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com, or you can slide into my DMs on Instagram and Twitter, where I am at Emma Guns. If you want to chat to me and thousands of other listeners of this podcast, then I urge you to join the Facebook group. The link to join can be found in the show notes. If you're listening to this episode, the show notes will be where you are listening. They They have all of the information that you might need, whether it's social media platforms, any of the links from the show, and also that Facebook group. Please do join. Thank you so much for listening. Stay well, and I will see you on the next one.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.